welcome you back tonight to the life of Jacob. Last time we focused on the great story of Jacob's ladder and what a significant story it was in the change that took over in Jacob's life. We had spoken several times from Jacob's early life, and there wasn't really a lot of good to say about his character, but God did something for Jacob on the night that he had the great dream of Jacob's ladder. At that time, he had left home. He was fleeing from the wrath of his brother, who he had deceived and had lied to his father. He was traveling to Haran from where his mother came from, Rebekah, and so he was really going there for two reasons. One was to get away from his past, to get away from the deception that brought the hostility and the anger with his brother Esau. But also he was looking for a wife, and his father had said, "You must leave this area, and you must go somewhere else to get a wife. Do not take a wife from among the Canaanites." And his brother Esau had done so, and it had displeased and brought grief to Isaac and Rebekah. And so Jacob left, and he was instructed to go back to the home of his mother, back to the city of Haran, and there to stay in safety until the anger of Esau had passed, and also to find a wife. And after he left to go on that long journey, the first night that he stopped was a place that he would later name Bethel. And there on that night, when he's laid his head down on the pillow and he fell asleep, God came to Jacob in an amazing and powerful story. It's an amazing story of how God reached out to a man who he had called, who he had a purpose for, but who was not walking in the way that he should, and God spoke to Jacob's life. Bethel is a place where Jacob found God, and that's a powerful story. I believe at Bethel, Jacob made peace with God. Somehow he was arrested by God. If I can use that word, somehow the direction that Jacob was going and some of the decisions that he had made, somehow God got a hold of him at Bethel, and somehow God took care of those things, and Jacob listened. It was at Bethel also that Jacob received the covenant from God that God had put upon Abraham, and then upon his son Isaac, and now the grandson Jacob. It was there that Jacob said these words that would really mark him in the rest of his life when he said, "The Lord will be my God." It was at Bethel that Jacob drove the stake in the ground, said, "He's my God. He's not just the God of my father Abraham and the God of my father Isaac, but he's my God." I think how precious Bethel is for us as Christians. And we need a Bethel. That's not what I was going to preach about tonight, but I just can't get away from what Bethel means to Jacob. I think how important it is for you to have a Bethel, have that place where you make that choice and that decision. I'm going to live for Jesus. I'm making the choices for myself, not because my parents want me to, not because my spouse wants me to, not because I go to church and other people call me, but because God speaks to us. And it was in Bethel that Jacob somehow made his relationship with God real. And he drove that stake in the ground, and I love that story. I love that part of the story. Every Christian needs a Bethel. Well, we move on tonight in the story to the family of Jacob. If you've studied much about the Old Testament and the patriarchs, you know it gets pretty, there's just a lot of lines that come from here. And Jacob, you may know, had 12 sons. And we're going to talk about tonight, where do those sons come from? Actually, we're going to talk more about that next time, but Jacob had 12 sons. Jacob had two wives, and he had two concubines. And so when you think about that, why so many? And was that the best? Was that what God wanted for Jacob? And we're going to look at the story tonight of how Jacob got his two wives. And then as we move through Jacob's family, his wives and their children, and his concubines and their children, we're going to learn more. And I said before that there's a lot of things from Jacob's life that's very painful. Jacob We've kind of seen the part that it would look like Jacob brought on himself already. Not that he became perfect in any way, because later on he showed weakness in some ways. But tonight I want to go to the story and begin with, first of all, where does Jacob's wives come from? Where do his sons come from? There's a lot in the story of Jacob that's very serious, and there's some parts in the story that I think are a little bit fun. So tonight I hope to have a little fun with Jacob. And the romance story, if you like a romance story, turn to Genesis chapter 29. It's a pretty good story. Genesis chapter 29, I'm going to read verses 9 through 30. So I'm going to read a good part of the chapter. And how did Jacob get his two wives? Genesis chapter 29, beginning at verse 9. "We can't," they replied, "until all the flocks are gathered and the stone has been rolled away from the mouth of the well. Then we will water the sheep." While he was still talking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess. When Jacob saw Rachel, daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and Laban's sheep, he went over and rolled the stone away from the mouth of the well and watered his uncle's sheep. Then Jacob kissed Rachel and began to weep aloud. He had told Rachel that he was a relative of her father and a son of Rebekah. So she ran and told her father. As soon as Laban heard the news about Jacob, his sister's son, he hurried to meet him. He embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his home. And there Jacob told him all these things. Then Laban said to him, "You are my own flesh and blood." After Jacob had stayed with him for a whole month, Laban said to him, "Just because you are a relative of mine, should you work for me for nothing? Tell me what your wages should be." Now Laban had two daughters. The name of his older was Leah, and the name of his younger was Rachel. Leah had weak eyes, but Rachel was lovely in form and beautiful. Jacob was in love with Rachel and said, "I'll work for you 7 years in return for your younger daughter, Rachel." Laban said, "It's better that I give her to you than to some other man. Stay here with me." So Jacob served 7 years to get Rachel, but they seemed like only a few days to him because of his love for her. Then Jacob said to Laban, "Give me my wife. My time is completed and I want to lie with her." So Laban brought together all the people of the place and gave a feast. But when evening came, he took his daughter Leah and gave her to Jacob, and Jacob lay with her. And Laban gave his servant girl Zilpah to his daughter as her maidservant. When morning came, there was Leah. So Jacob said to Laban, "What is this you have done to me? I have served you for Rachel, didn't I? Why have you deceived me?" Laban replied, "It is not our custom here to give the youngest daughter in marriage before the older one. Finish this daughter's bridal week, then we will give you the younger one also in return for another 7 years of work." And Jacob did so. He finished the week with Leah, and then Laban gave him his daughter Rachel to be his wife. Laban gave his daughter girl Bilhah to his daughter Rachel as her maidservant. Jacob lay with Rachel also, and he loved Rachel more than Leah, and he worked for Laban another 7 years. I said a minute ago that I want to have some fun with this story tonight, but I should probably back up from that and say this story isn't all about fun, and obviously it's about some pain too, and we'll see that more in the next story of Jacob's life. When Jacob set off from Bethel, that place where God had spoken to him and changed him, he traveled about 300 miles or so to an area called Haran, to a city that's north of Israel and a little bit east, but primarily north, to the city of Haran. And there it was that Abraham had come a long time before. He had settled in Haran for a time, and then he moved on. God called him to come down into the promised land. And so in some ways, Jacob was going back to an ancestral home, the ancestral home of Abraham and his brother and his brother's descendants. And the story is much like, it's almost like a second half of the story of when Abraham had sent his servant back to Haran to find a wife for Isaac. You notice in both the second and the third generation of the patriarchs, there's an intention, a purpose in going back and finding a wife from among the descendants of Abraham's family. It was at a well that the bride was found. This time, the husband finds her himself. You remember that Abraham's servant found Rebecca at a well. It's interesting where some men find their wives. So I want to take a minute tonight. I want to ask some of you where you met your wife, okay? Or where you met your husband. I'm going to start with Harry Shambach and Romaine. Can you tell me where you met your wife that you've been now married to for 66 years? Okay, you speak. You never met. You met in the nursery. Did he love you at first sight?
He
said
he when he was 5 years old.
He did. Oh, my. And here we are 66 years later. Brad, where did you meet your wife? Oh, yeah. In school. And where did you meet Bob? I didn't hear that. I see. All right, I'm going to pick on a few people. Shannon, where did you meet Chris? Oh, there goes that note. Ah, you met your husband at church camp. Wow. Was it love at first sight? He better tell you that, huh? Oh, wow. Wow. I just want to pick on a few other people here. Diane Blaschick, where did you meet your husband? High school. All right. Wendell, where did you meet your wife? Woo! Wow. Nina, where did you meet Chris? In church? Yeah. Helen, where did you meet Paul? In his home. Yeah. 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 Carol, where did you meet your husband? At camp? Yeah, at camp. Well, Rebecca, we're, you know, we got your name in the story. Where'd you meet your boyfriend? No, I'm just teasing you. Well, I met Debbie in Sunday school class at First Church of the Nazarene in Columbus, Ohio, and that was a precious name. It was love at first sight on my part, of course, but you know how the ladies are. Sometimes they need to have a little convincing, perhaps. Well, anyways, Jacob's meeting with Rachel was pretty special. It's a pretty neat place that they met at this well, and it was. It is a romantic story. Once again, it seems to be love at first sight on the side for Jacob. I mean, he's been on a 300-mile journey, and he knows he's getting close, and he stops and he says, "Where's Laban's family?" And well, right here, and this is the well, and so he goes over to the well, and then guess who walks up? Rachel comes to the well, and look at his reaction when he meets Rachel. And it is a pretty neat story. Number one, it says that he saw her, of course. Maybe he was watching the people, and all of a sudden the shepherdess gets his attention. But he goes right over, and he rolls away the stone. The other shepherds say, "Oh, well, we can't water our animals until somebody rolls the stone away." And they all get here. And so basically, I kind of see the story like this. Jacob says, "Oh, I can get that stone. I can roll that stone away." Maybe he was showing off a little bit for Rachel. I don't know. But he goes over, and then it says that he watered all of his uncle's sheep. So right away, he kind of takes Rachel's animals, says, I'll help you with that, and waters their sheep. And then, of course, the big thing it says in verse, where are we at here? I'm looking for the verse. I don't. Well, you must have found it. He kissed her. So that was quite a progression of romance there. Now, what did Rachel do? Her reaction was a little bit different. Well, wait a minute. One more thing it says that Jacob did after he kissed her. It says that he wept aloud. So I don't know what it was that caused that. But, I mean, you go from, you know, you're meeting this girl of your dreams and she's absolutely beautiful and you fall in love immediately and you kiss her and then you weep aloud. Now let's compare that to what Rachel does. I mean, we know that Jacob is totally smitten, but what about Rachel? Verse 12 says she ran and told her father. So Rachel's reaction was, wow, this is something big here. And so she runs and she tells her father. It is the beginning of an intriguing story between Jacob and Rachel. And then we have introduced into the story the person of Laban. And Laban, of course, is Rachel's father. Laban is also the sister of Rebekah. And when Abraham's servant had gone to get a wife for Isaac, in the last generation, there was Laban, the young brother at the time, who kind of got himself involved in the negotiation and seems to be the main and primary character. And once again, we have Laban that becomes a central figure in this part of the story. Laban is the grandnephew of Abraham, and so you have this kind of this large family, and Laban steps forward, and he's the father of this girl who's been kissed by Jacob, and it appears once again that Laban finds a way to get himself in the middle of the story, and he does so with his daughters, both Leah and Rachel. On the outside, it would seem like Laban does the right thing. I mean, there's things that he says and he does here that just tells us or reminds us that Laban is stepping up as the father of the bride. And so the first thing it says here in verse 13, as soon as Laban heard the news about Jacob, his sister's son, he hurried to meet him. And so Laban knows how significant the visit is. Perhaps he remembered how important the visit was the first time when Abraham's servant came and found a wife for Isaac. And it says that he embraced him and he kissed him. In other words, Laban kind of gave the ceremonial, the hug and the kiss on the cheek. Certainly not the kind of kiss that Jacob gave to Rachel, but Laban embraces Jacob at this time as a relative and welcomes him into his home and embraces him. And then in verse 14, he says, then Laban said to him, you are my own flesh and blood. So up to this point, we see in Laban a welcoming of Jacob and a positive kind of a coming across as being very positive in his relationship. And then added to it in the next verse, we kind of get this picture of Laban that he feels like, now Jacob's staying with us and he's working for me, so I ought to pay you. And the next verse says, after Jacob had stayed with him for a whole month, Laban said to him, just because you are a relative of mine, should you work for me for nothing? Tell me what your wages should be. Now, this again gives an appearance that Laban wanted to be honest with Jacob. And you wonder, well, why did he say that? Was he really thinking about that? Or was Laban already, is Laban one of these really oily type of guys who are just kind of looking for a way, looking for an advantage, looking for maybe something to get out of Jacob? And so he offers to pay him. Perhaps he really just wanted Jacob to work for him. Maybe he saw Jacob's character and he thought, well, I don't want to let this man get away. He could be one of my workers. Verse 15 sounds pretty good the way he describes it. Tell me what your wages should be. So what Jacob does is tell him what he really wants. I want your daughter, Rachel. And, you know, he's not particularly looking for money. Jacob is not, but he's looking for a wife, and he's looking to marry this beautiful girl that he's met already, and he's now had a month in the household of Laban, and he's been watching Rachel, and it's my guess that Laban maybe knew this already, and we don't know it, but it's my guess that all of a sudden Laban kind of sees a pathway. Laban sees an opportunity, and Laban ends up showing kind of, I think, his own colors. You might say about Laban, well, it was about the money. I just kind of see in the character of Laban, like all of a sudden those dollar signs come up in Laban's eyes, and he thinks, well, what can I get out of this? You know, opportunity. Maybe he was really concerned about Leah. That's possible. But when I read this story, the deception and so forth, I don't see so much of that. Maybe it's possible, but whatever the case, it seems here that Laban has an opportunity. He has this nephew who doesn't have a lot of money. I mean, he left it behind when he fled from his father's household. And so the men talk about it for a while and they come up with a plan. Jacob doesn't have a dowry. He doesn't have money to pay for a bride. And so they come to an agreement. I'll work for 7 years for you. And Jacob said, I will work for 7 years if you would give me your daughter Rachel in marriage. And so Jacob begins that 7 years of labor working for his uncle. We also know that Jacob was a good worker. And we're told later on in the next chapter that Jacob had been able to accumulate wealth himself. He had wisely done his work. And so there was a growing of Jacob's possessions and his money as well during this time. But he worked, it would appear, faithfully for 7 years for his wife. And we're told that that they went very quickly. For Jacob, they go very quickly. He's in love, and it's worth the wait. And 7 years, it's like, I don't know what kind of relationship or connection he had with Rachel during those 7 years. But for 7 years, he is just, he's toiling for the privilege and opportunity to marry this woman of his dreams that he loves so much. And so finally, and I do notice after 7 years, it's Jacob that comes to Laban and says, Laban, I've been working with you for 7 years. Now give me my wife. Verse 21 says, then Jacob said to Laban, give me my wife. My time is completed and I want to lie with her. So we know Jacob's been thinking about all along, every day, every month, every year, continuing to work so that he would be able to have his wife. And so Laban responds, it says, again, what's going on in Laban's heart and Laban's mind? So Laban brought together all the people of the place and gave a feast. And it says, but when evening came, he took his daughter Leah and gave her to Jacob, and Jacob lay with her. When morning came, there was Leah. I'm guessing that at this wedding party, there was a lot of wine. Obviously, we don't know exactly what happened and maybe how it all transpired, but I'm guessing that Laban threw a pretty good party and he invited a lot of people and he provided a lot of wine. And my guess is he just allowed Jacob to probably drink and drink and drink. And I don't know about Leah. I've often wondered about Leah and Rachel in the story. And where was Rachel during this time? Was she banished to her tent? Did she know what was going on? Was she shocked by what happened, or did she feel like she could not control or stand up for herself? I don't know. It's like in this story, I don't know who to feel worse for, whether to feel the worst for Leah or to feel the worst for Rachel, but both of them, it seems like, suffered the pain of deception and manipulation, and that's what Laban was. I'm guessing that there was a lot of wine. There was a great feast. It may have actually lasted a long time before the consummation of the wedding. And the references to the week, fulfill the week with your wife, Leah. In other words, it wasn't just like we have a wedding and a reception, and within 3 hours, the bride and groom are on their way. There might have been other ceremonies or other cultural things that were a part, and maybe all along the way there was the drinking and the wine, the alcohol, and I'm guessing that that's what it was like. Perhaps, of course, it was dark, it was at evening, it was nighttime, it was late, and however it happened, there was the deception. There was a lot of deception. I've often wondered where Rachel was during this time again. Was she locked away, or did she know what was happening, or is the culture so different from us today that we might not really quite understand all the inner workings of this story? But we know that Jacob gets up in the morning and simply three words, there was Leah, and the pain of the rejection and what was going on in the heart of Jacob and the rejection that Leah felt and would feel later, and we'll see within just a few verses of the next story and the next chapter. Again, I don't know who to feel the sorriest for, Rachel or Leah. Jacob certainly was deceived. He worked hard for 7 years. He had entered into an agreement and a contract and a binding with Laban, and Laban deceives him greatly. I do notice, when I think of this story, it's ironic, the reaction of Jacob. Jacob, you can just almost hear in the words of Jacob, he cries out to Laban, "What is this you have done to me?" I mean, you can just see Jacob waking up in the morning and knowing that he has, this is his wife, he slept with her. In that culture, in that day, for a man to sleep with a woman, even if it was forcible, according to some of the stories we see in the Old Testament, if a man sleeps with a woman, she becomes his wife, and there's no turning back, there's no going back, there's no, well, we're just going to forget about that at all. And Jacob knows that. He knows that the honor of Leah is at stake, and Laban knows that the honor of Leah is at stake. And so that's like, it never seems to be questioned. Well, what are you going to do with Leah now? I mean, Jacob knows she's my wife, and the pain that comes with having the wife but not the love that, that God intended to have. And so Jacob, I just imagine how angry he was. "What have you done to me?" He says to Laban, "What have you done to me?" I think maybe a better question that, that Jacob could have asked is, "Laban, what have you done to Leah? What have you done to Rachel?" You know, the consequences of self-centeredness go so far in generations and families and decisions that people make because they're manipulative, because they're deceptive, because they are greedy, because they can't look and care about the feelings of other people, brings great pain. I said before, when we look at the patriarchs, every generation has the pain of favoritism, has the pain of deception. And here Jacob says, what is this you have done to me? Why have you deceived me?" I also see such irony in that. It strikes me as a pretty ironic question for Jacob to ask. That's probably exactly what Esau felt, something like that. "Jacob, why have you deceived me? What is this you have done to me? What have you done," as it says, "to me?" The implications of deception are painful and bring terrible consequences to this generation too. I kind of lightly about the romance, but when I come to the deceptive part, it doesn't feel light anymore. And the pain of deception, the pain of favoritism, and such that will be a part of this family. Interesting, Laban just seems to have this veil of excuses or rationalizations or whatever word you want to put in there. He said, "Well, you know, in our culture, you always marry the oldest daughter first. So that's why I did that, Jacob." Again, Laban's heart, his consideration of their feelings and all that probably don't leave us with much of a good word to say about Laban. Laban probably knows Jacob's character by now. He has seen him change. He has probably seen how he's worked hard for him for 7 years, and for Laban, he's just taken full advantage of someone and lied to them and deceived them. Then Laban, again, the oily snake, what does he say next? He says, "Don't worry, I have a solution for this, Jacob." You know, it's like Laban again, here's this veneer of justice, this veneer of being fair and honest, and, "Well, you can have both my daughters." And then, of course, that line that's added on, "in return for another 7 years of work." There you have Laban, the fullness of the deception. And it'll come later when they try to leave. "Yes, you can have Rachel. I wouldn't keep you from my daughter, Rachel, but for another 7 years of work." Certainly Jacob Jacob must have had more character than I've given him credit for at times. I think if I was Jacob, you know, I don't know how I would have felt about the deal that Laban was offering to him, but obviously his love for Rachel was so strong. And there's something I think about Jacob's character in the story that shows us that he is a changed man. I mean, I could see him becoming very angry, becoming very hostile, demanding his rights, and yet Jacob just kind of quietly says, yeah, what you did, you've done to me, but I'm willing to work another 7 years for Rachel. I love her that much, and I want her that much. And so he is willing to work another 7 years. And Jacob did so. Verse 28 says, and Jacob did so. He finished the week with Leah, and then Laban gave him his daughter Rachel to be his wife. Laban gave his servant girl Bilhah to his daughter Rachel as her maidservant. Jacob lay with Rachel also, and he loved Rachel more than Leah, and he worked for Laban another 7 years. And so Laban is able to manipulate out of Jacob twice as much work and twice as much labor. But in the midst of all this, a couple of things, and we'll go into it in the next time we're together and we look at this story. Number one is God has seen the injustice, and God sees the suffering that Leah will go through, and God has something to say about that and the unfairness of the story. And rather than start into that tonight, say that we'll pick that up. And the other thing is, God also was watching out for Jacob, and God blessed Jacob during those next 7 years. And what Laban thought would be an opportunity to steal from Jacob, God turns the table in part, and God seems to just turn the circumstances around. But by the end of the next 7 years, now Jacob is the one that has acquired the security. God has blessed him in many ways, so that when he travels back to the promised land, when he takes his family and he goes back at the end of the 14 years, God has blessed him and increased. And God is using Jacob. You remember the covenant with Abraham, the covenant with Isaac, and now the covenant with Jacob. God's hand has been on Jacob throughout this story, even though there is a very painful part to it, and we see the injustice of it. It reminds me of the scripture in the New Testament that I feel sometimes gets misquoted. Sometimes we want to say that God works out everything for our good. And that's not what the scripture says. God works in every circumstance to bring about the good of them that love them or are called according to his purpose. God is still working in Jacob's life. God is still working in Rachel's life and Leah's life. And the truth is, God is faithful to work in our lives. When we go through bad times, maybe times when people have done us wrong, maybe at times when somebody has stolen from us or stolen character or stolen money, reputation, or they've mistreated us or they've offended us or they have been disloyal and broken us. God knows that. He knows about the painful parts of life too. God was faithful to Jacob in the midst of that. And we see that throughout Jacob's life. Jacob was imperfect. Boy, he started off really bad. He kind of got back in this story. Maybe it was a way of God letting Jacob understand a little bit about how Esau felt. Maybe he was saying to Jacob, Jacob, you know, you live by the sword, you die by the sword, and you live by deception. And now deception has come your way, and you know what that feels like. Perhaps, I wonder if God is working in Jacob's life like that. But the truth of it is, God was faithful to continue in Jacob's life, and he cared about Jacob, and he brought him through this difficult time. Jacob could have shown a pretty nasty character here. You might even say he deserved to show some, but he doesn't seem to. He just keeps plowing. He just keeps, for another 7 years, he's plowing Laban's fields, and God brings him through, and you might even say God blesses him in the story because of it. God hasn't forgotten about Jacob, nor has he forgot about Leah in this story either, and we'll move on next time to the story of the children of Leah and Rachel and how you get the 12 sons of Jacob and how God... over and over again, it said in the next part of this chapter, in chapter 30, God remembered Leah. God saw the injustice that was there, and not that God reverses our consequences of sin in our life, but God remembered them and helped them. And so that part of the story is important too. And we'll. continue in that in a couple of weeks. I mentioned this morning that Debbie and I will be away next week, and Heather will have the service next Sunday night, and Lord willing, we'll come back to the story of Jacob and his family next time.